Checks.com.
We're your home team.
1400.
Your home team on your AM dial. We're your home team. Lower Fairfield County for your special kind of style. With the music that you love and the news that you need. We're your home team. WSTC.
We're your team with sports and traffic.
Bit of a memory, because that's what this day is for. Good afternoon, a little after 3 o'clock, too, and I am Mike Robb on what is our final day for News Talk 1400 WSTC 1350 WNLK. It has been a day of remembrance, of course, with John and the house party, and it's going to continue for the next little less than 3 hours as we'll share memories. We're going to invite you also, if you have some memories or things you'd like to share about your experiences with us here at both stations in Stamford and Norwalk. You're certainly welcome to give us a call, 203-845-3044. And with me in the room are some gentlemen who certainly share a huge, huge piece of history here. Let's go around. You know, I was going to introduce you individually, but you know, the names and the voices, at least for some, are so familiar, I think you should do it yourself. So, sir, you would be.
I'm John Roman. I have been here off and on for a long time, since 1965. News reporter, news director, news editor, program director of both STC and then our sister FM station, WYRS-FM 96.7. Talk show host, interviewer, live broadcast, remote, you name it. Did all that.
Wow. And you still came back again.
Yeah.
And you're still walking, which I think is an achievement
in its own. The interesting part is that I always kept my finger in the news, and I still do. And I'll be back doing something else again and again a few more times, I'm sure.
There you go. And the gentleman next to you would be?
Peter Holliday. And I joined WSTC back in 1969 and worked with John for many, many years. Great news director. And
Peter, did you have long hair back then?
Yeah, a little more than I do now.
Were you were you one of those the love children of
1969? Yeah, right. Yeah, it's been a... I was there, you know, 18 years with the station and saw a lot of changes. And it's, you know, things, as you know, change in broadcasting. And this is not a good day. I mean, when you're losing a local, you know, local voice in a local station or stations.
Before we move on to the next introduction, let me insert something there to say that change is inevitable. And some folks from the newspaper were here earlier, and I think you guys may disagree or agree with this, but change is inevitable, but media reinvents itself. Media goes on.
Of course it does.
So there really is no end to media. Media just is a different form. It reemerges as something else and continues, and the needs of the public are always taken care of. It's just the manner of which they're done could be a little different.
Look at how they changed in our career times.
Look at the computers in this room.
Right. I went to work with tubes. We had tubes.
You went to school with Marconi.
We had a board up in the control room one night in a rack like this, pulling tubes out to see how many he could take out before they went off the air. The stories we got.
Now let's finish your introductions. If you can swing that mic around for us, Mr. Holliday, sir, you would be.
I'm George Cooper, and I worked for WNOK shortly after they went on the air in the early 1950s, and. I did all kinds of things, including briefly the morning going on the air, 6 a.m.
Wow.
And at the time I was commuting to school in New York. I was just out of the service, and it really only lasted a couple of weeks because I was sleeping all day in school. So
were you interested in radio from the get-go before you went in the service? Was this something that fascinated you?
I was a radio listener as a kid with Tom Mix.
The great days of the golden age of radio,
yes,
as they say.
Yes, the golden age with all of the serials, and I just couldn't keep away from it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got into the service, and I got with Armed Forces Radio Service in Europe, and I ended up at the key network station in Frankfurt, Germany in 1946, and we had 500,000 watts. We covered all of Europe.
Wow.
From Turkey to Great Britain.
English-speaking?
English-speaking, mm-hmm. Yes. I still have about two pieces of fan mail from, from one was from England, one was from Turkey, I think.
Wow. Now, then you started at WNLK in what year? Do you
about remember? 50, about 1950, 51.
Now, how long had the station been around at that point?
About 2 years. They started, I think, about 48,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And they were founded by a husband and wife from Washington, D.C., named Dr. and Mrs. Ginsburg.
Mm-hmm.
He had been an economist with the federal government and came up with his three daughters and his wife, and they started the station. One of our first program directors was a man named Milt Warren. I don't know if anybody around town remembers him. We also had two staff announcers, one named Vin Lawford, who was supposedly a cousin of Peter Lawford, the actor.
Wow.
Who married a local girl who I happened to have been a classmate in high school with,
mm-hmm.
Connie Stokowski. Any of these names might strike a note with some of the old-timers around
sure,
town.
Sure.
And then there was Bob Drews, who was also on announcing staff. And we really had a ball. Except until the flood.
Yeah, we want to get down. The flood was what year? 57?
57, I believe. 55 or
55.
50? 55.
Yeah, 55? Yeah.
55. That washed the station out. It was on Wall Street near the corner of Wall and Main on that block, and everything was gone.
The whole building.
The whole building, everything.
There are pictures that I've seen online where there were watermarks, a third story? Up there of where,
yes,
the, where the
second
where,
and third story.
Where the, what I mean, obviously the station broadcasted. Were you working there at the time of the flood?
I think I may have left. I may have gone to school
okay.
full time.
Okay. Yeah, I was just curious as to how they handled the coverage on that. No, I mean, it was a time of, you talk about a time where radio was needed. I mean, to today it is. Last week with the storm, over the summer with Irene, and back then it sounds like as well.
The communities were islands. Norwalk was separated. And you got from place to place. The Parkway Bridge was washed out. Everything was washed out. You couldn't get from one side of Norwalk to the other unless you had a duck or some kind of a boat. The bridges were all gone.
Yeah.
Same thing was true in every river going up and down the coast. They were all separate communities by riverbanks.
Now, WSTC, obviously, were you at STC at the time of the flood?
No. Okay. I was there, it came about 10 years after, I guess.
About 10 years after, like in the mid-60s.
I was there for the Great Blackout. Yeah. When we broadcast from the bomb shelter at 270 Strawberry Hill, or one, what, two, what, Strawberry Hill Avenue, whatever the address was.
One of those places.
Yeah, 270.
Now, what year was that?
66, mm-hmm. 65, yeah.
That was the New York blackout, right?
Yeah.
And I imagine, you know, I didn't live in this part of the country at the time. I was in the Midwest, but we were obviously, you know, we could see it on TV and could see what was going on. It must have been frightening to live in this part of the country at that point.
It was an interesting evening. I was having dinner with a young lady at a restaurant in downtown Stamford, and all the staff came running out of the kitchen screaming at the Russians to drop the bomb. So I stopped having dinner, went back to the studio, got hooked up with the chief engineer. We grabbed some records and headed up to the bomb shelter, which existed under our transmitter.
Right.
On Strawberry Hill Avenue, at 320 Strawberry Hill Avenue was the right address. And we broadcast from there. And he tweaked that thing up, and we got mail from a good part of the country that we were the only people on the air.
How long did that last before you guys went back to normal broadcasting?
I'm not sure, because we could run a month on the generator. The power was back, I guess, within a day or so, more or less. But we could run
how
for
times
a month.
Have changed, huh, with that.
We could run for a month. We had a big tank there.
Right.
Yeah. And I just recently finished off the last batch of civil defense carbohydrate supplements. five gallon can of lemon drops, guys.
There you go. How'd that work out for you? Just,
very tasty.
There you go. There you go. You're listening to News Talk 1400 WSTC 1350 WNLK. My name is Mike Robb. It's been my pleasure for the past couple of years to have been the programming and operations person here. And on this last day of broadcast from this facility and under the current ownership for both stations, we're taking some time to look back and remember, but you certainly can join us as well. 203-845-3044. We're going to play a little music, too, as the day goes on. And generally, just kind of be what radio used to be. A lot of friendly, warm and voices and some interesting music from the period of time, and also a chance for you to share your memories with us as well. Peter Holliday. Now, when you came here, you were 1969 was a different time of change for the country. I mean, we were more concerned about the things other than the Russians at that point. What were the big, when you came in, what was it like at the station at that point? What were the big focuses?
Yes, I really have to think back. I was impressed with the station, the staff. It was like, I was actually hired as a staff announcer. And
can you define what that actually means for those who don't know what?
Yeah.
What does a staff announcer do?
You know, did some news, music programming, and then eventually I moved into sports and did a lot with Len Gambino, who was the sports director.
Great Len Gambino.
Yeah,
absolutely.
We did a lot. I'd tell you one funny story. We were doing an FCAC championship game with Trinity Catholic, which was Stanford Catholic
right
back then. And it was up at Kennedy Stadium in Bridgeport. And at those days, you didn't have the microwave. I mean, it was line, you know, putting in the lines. And we got up there, and we had nothing. No lines. And so we weren't on the air. So we had to get, I don't know, the telephone company or something that came in. And meanwhile, the phones were going crazy at the station because we weren't on the air. The game was going. So they finally hooked us up, but I'm listening on my earphones and it just didn't sound right. I mean, you get
sure
a certain sound, and all of a sudden this kid comes across the field and he says, "You're broadcasting into the hot dog truck across the field." They had a speaker in there and they hooked us up into there. So we were brought, you know, and, we didn't get on the air until like the middle of the third quarter.
Wow.
And that was, yeah, that was not good.
And those were the days that it wasn't easy to get a computer to make up the difference or something.
You couldn't. Right. There was no way. Actually,
right.
It's interesting that Peter mentioned the lines. At that point, we had, I'm going to say, close to 50 dedicated permanent broadcast lines all over the marketplace. We used to do a lot of live remotes routinely, and rather than reorder a line each time, we had a dedicated broadcast line.
Sure, absolutely.
To
smart business.
Meeting rooms, churches, civic places of gatherings. So some places we could do it all the time, but each time a game moved, you had to order a new line from the phone company, and sometimes...
And you had to deal with the school officials, and some of which aren't, you know, too, they're not the easiest people to reach to this day, sometimes about things like that.
We know about them.
Yeah, that works. Let me, guys, I'm going to take a couple of phone calls here, too, but feel free to join in. Let me go to this. Hi, is this Larry?
Yes, it is. Hi, Mike. Hi, John Roman.
This is Larry Stoller. I've known Larry for a number of years. Larry and I, I really haven't talked about my history, but Larry and I worked together at WSTC and the station on the FM there, Cool 96.7, at the time before the merger with Cox.
We sure did.
And then you were here for a number of years after that, Larry, right?
I moved with the station from 117 Prospect Street to 100 Prospect, the Century Plaza building. I was the last person in that building, the first person. I was the last building, last person in Stanford before we moved to Norwalk, where you guys are now.
Right.
But I want to talk particular, John was certainly related to this, 1988 to 1993, my first time working there, John mentioned remotes. We did Toys for Tots for 3 weeks a year. We covered all kinds of local events, all kinds of people like Don Mattson, Bill White, who's now at WGN in Chicago, and Shelley Stewart, and some of the news people, John Roman, Len Gambino, Michelle Donofrio, Lisa Lucera, and others I probably left out. To this day, that was the best time I ever worked in radio and the best job I ever had.
I think everybody will admit to that. You know, Larry, somebody said the other day that radio is a bug.
Yep.
Not unlike a flu or something else that attacks you, and it attacks you at early age. And some folks, it may attack them at a later age, but nonetheless, whatever it is, genuinely is something that gets infested inside you. Would you gentlemen agree with that?
Absolutely. Yeah, pretty much.
And it's something you can't create or make up. You either have it or you don't. And when you get it, it doesn't leave you.
No, it does not. Now, you also worked here at 444 Westport Avenue, right?
Yes, I did, from 96 to 2001.
And did all sorts of different things. What were some of your best memories at that time, Larry?
We had one of the few teenage talk shows on a weekly basis that I was involved in.
My son was on that show.
That's right. That was the last time I ran into you, actually. It was called A Voice in the Crowd.
Yep.
One of the few kids would get on the air, talk about whatever they wanted to. We'd take phone calls and have guests live in the studio. You were talking about doing high school football. Peter Holliday was. I remember the day when somebody, they were out doing a game, and the cell phone out at the location died. And they had to come, you know, go back to the studio to get replaced. We'd go back to the field. I had to stall for almost an hour to get everything back to normal. But those are the things you do, you know, and those are things that are wonderful on radio. Also, we did a lot of what it was called board hopping or engineering in those days of a lot of shows. Like Lenny Cinto was on the air yesterday morning talking about that, and I called in to say I worked with him and a lot of other great people at 444 Westport Avenue in those days. Yep.
It has been a good run for a lot of folks and a lot of history in the space that I'm sitting in right now. And a lot of history before. That's what we're talking about. Gentlemen, we're going to have to do what you certainly understand is a quick stop here for a moment to take a moment out. We're going to come back and let everybody have a chance to talk. If you're on hold, please hang with us. If you would like to join us, you certainly can do so easily at 203-845-3044. Love to hear from you at that point. This is News Talk of 1400 WSDC, 1350 WNLK.
Now the Fairfield County Hometown Calendar.
Friends of Felines will take part in National Adoption Weekend on November 12th and 13th. Do you want to welcome a new cat or kitten into your family? If so, come to PetSmart at 288 West Avenue in Stamford from noon to 3 p.m. You'll have a chance to meet the many felines that need loving homes. Fill out an application in advance at adoptapet.org.
The Fairfield County Hometown Calendar is a presentation of 1400 WSTC, 1350 WNLK. Depend on it. Now the Fairfield County Hometown Calendar.
The American Red Cross will hold a blood drive on November 26th from 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. at Northfield Church in Weston. Donations will also be taken on November 28th at Fairfield University. So come to the Student Center on North Menson Road from 11 a.m. to 4:45 p.m. Visit redcrossblood.org.
The Fairfield County Hometown Calendar is a presentation of 1400 WSTC, 1350 WNLK. Depend on it. Now the Fairfield County Hometown Calendar.
Do you live and vote in Norwalk? Then please participate in the 4th Annual Election Day Food Drive by bringing a non-perishable food item to the Norwalk polling sites with you on Tuesday, November 8th. Especially needed are canned soups and tuna fish, peanut butter and jelly, cereals, and canned fruit. Call 203-854-6930.
The Fairfield County Hometown Calendar is a presentation of 1400 WSTC, 1350 WNLK. Depend on it.
WSTC. We play whatever we want.
WNLK. Well, 324 here on Sunday. It is a celebration and a remembrance of two great radio stations. Moving on to the next phase in their life, as life good does. I am Mike Robb, along with a whole host of folks here who I will reintroduce. But, you know, it's always good to get listeners on, and I've had a couple of folks who've been waiting, and I appreciate it. Hi, James. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
James, go ahead. What would you like to say?
First of all, I'm just going to miss the local thing, but I hope, you know, that continues. Maybe get some of these guys back on with the new owners. But I had a little trivia. Does anyone remember RBJ?
Of course.
Oh, yes, yes.
My great mentor, a good friend of John Francis Xavier Martin, who many of you may remember as well, a man who brought the big band sound first to WSTC and then over a very large area on our then FM station, first WYRS, then WJZZ. 6 hours on Saturdays, the RBJ bandstand straight ahead.
Yeah, Roy Jorgensen, a great guy.
Right.
I knew him, and I know Peter Holliday. I met Peter once. He probably would never remember, but you're a great guy too, Peter, man. Mm.
Thank you.
Unsolicited, Peter. Unsolicited. You like it? That's your pay for the day, buddy. Enjoy. You know, it's interesting that he brought up about different music. The kind of music the radio stations played obviously changed over the years. just to give the background, my own background, I worked for WNLK back from 1980 to 1985, along with a number of good people, some of whom I hope we'll get a chance to come by today. David Smith, Paul Peorick, all the, some really good folks. We at the time were what was called Adult Contemporary on WNLK, which meant we played Neil Diamond and some of the stuff in that day that wasn't quite hard, but wasn't quite necessarily a big band as well. Did WSTC ever go, ever do much contemporary music over those years?
Not really.
No,
no, not
no
really.
No Beatles, as big as the Beatles were?
Some mild stuff, yeah. In the later years, there was, but nothing really that hard, no.
I think Rick Petrone took over the jazz show.
Right? Well, we had him start doing jazz on Saturday and Sunday nights, and the first thing we knew, he'd come in with two or three milk crates full of records, and he'd get requests. All right, now, there was a commercial jazz station in New York then, RVR. They made a big fuss over him. All the things he didn't have that he'd promised the next week, they were playing Monday through Friday. So that was what led us to put the jazz format on our FM station. I went to the owner at the time, Mr. Gillespie, and I said, give us a shot. And he did. And we made it work. And we took it up to 24 hours, round the clock, all jazz, no playlist. The jocks knew the music, and they played it.
And for that lasted how long?
Till Al Donahue bought it in 82, and he didn't like drum solos, he didn't like bass solos, he didn't like sax solos.
I kind of eliminated jazz, didn't it?
The playlist became what someone said to play rather than what the jock wanted to play.
Radio in the 70s.
Well, but that took the creativity out of it. And it went from there.
We went into a... They did like a, almost like a syndicated thing. Was called the format was called the Music of Your Life.
Oh God! Yes. On STC that for a little while. Yeah,
yep.
Yeah.
We had which competitors probably I think at the time called Music of Your Death.
They hired a guy to be the morning guy. I'll never forget this. I don't even know if he's still alive, and I'm not going to mention his name, but he had great pipes. But between the years, there wasn't a single wheel turning. Whatever he saw, he read. He never critically analyzed.
Your name here. I'm your name
right?
here.
And I remember whatever he was reading, it was the wrong day, the wrong time, and everything else. And the owner came down the hall screaming to me and saying, what's wrong with him? I said, you didn't hire him to think.
But it was
Music
funny.
Of Your Life didn't last very long.
What happened was, I mean, they went to starting like at 6 in the morning with that, and they cut out, because we were doing like 3 hours of news.
Local
in the
news,
morning,
solid.
And the people called up, and they said, you got to get the news back on, you know. So
sure.
They did, yeah. So
sure.
We've seen the wheel reinvented a few times.
We've gone that. James, thank you very much for your call. I truly appreciate it. All right.
Hey.
Thank you, sir. Let me move on down to here. Hello, Al. Is that you?
No. Is this WSTC?
Yes, it is. Who am I talking to?
My name is Walt Graham. I used to work at WNLK back in the 1970s, late 70s.
Oh, beautiful. Let's talk about that a little bit. We're kind of cover both stations, obviously.
Yeah.
Tell us about now. What years were you at WNLK, Walt?
I was there from 75 until 79.
Okay. And what were they doing at that time as far as radio?
Okay, at that time it was, I would call it a top 40 music station.
Really?
I guess contemporary hits would be a better term for it. And we had David Smith on in the morning, and Bert Steer, Dave Herman, Dick Herman, sorry about that, and the late George Pulliam and the late Napoleon were there.
I came along, and not too long after you left, Walt, I came along in 1980 and worked with Phil Cutting, was the program director at WNLK.
Phil, of course. Yeah, Phil was PD when I was there.
Phil was there. In addition to that, Bert Steer was here. Lenny Kerr was here at that time. Paul Peorick and I were the kids. We were just fresh out of high school / early days of college, and so we were like the punks. Did the cleanup at that point, which is fine. David was on in the morning. Frank Morrow was in news. John Capiello, Steve Weiner, Virginia Graham. I mean, some great, great folks we had a great time.
I don't know, but Frank Morrow was there when I was there at the same time.
Absolutely. Well, you know, as far as it goes, what were some of your better memories? What was your best memory of the time? Any good radio stories?
Yeah, well, I was in sales, and another name that I didn't mention is Tony Ventrella. He was the sports guy. Did you know Tony?
No, he was here before I was.
He left early on, but a real talent. And as far as I know, he went to work in television, I think in Houston, if memory serves. But he used to come in the morning, you know, scribble a few notes on a sheet of paper and go on and do a five-minute sportscast. Really talented guy.
Wow.
He also was a talented hair cutter. I guess that had been...
good to have something to fall back on. Absolutely. Good. That's good.
All right. And what he used to give us free haircuts. We were at the Tree Town building at the time.
Yes.
And we would go out on the fire escape, and he would cut our hair. We'd just line up for a haircut. It was a good free service.
So you know, there were three things. There were three things in radio you always got: free food, free T-shirts, and now we can add to it free haircuts.
We never got that.
There's another connection here. I do a radio program for WSBQ called Acoustic Connections on Saturday nights. I don't know if that's going to be on this frequency. If it is, it would be full circle.
Absolutely. Well, you'll have to speak to the folks over there. I know they're excited about all the plans that they have for 1350 and 1400, and hopefully some of those plans will include you. Thank you, Walt. I appreciate it.
You'll do a good job.
All right. Thank you, brother. Take care. Let's move on over here real quick. Hi, this must be Al, right?
Hi, I think I'm Al.
Yeah, you better be Al. Yeah. Hi, Al. Where are you calling from?
Hey, I'm here in Stanford at the moment.
So what kind of memories, connections to the station
I'm
have?
I'm not going to reminisce or anything like that or suck up, but I got a question for you guys. What ever happened to local radio? Even in the middle of Hurricane Irene, I was out of town. I go to the website, and I'm trying to listen to it. You couldn't get anything. What are you doing to the people... when SHU buys your station, we have no more local. We don't have a local newspaper. We don't have a local radio station. How do you guys feel about that?
Well, let me jump in here, first of all, and say that this is a topic that a lot of folks are talking about. It is not necessarily the topic, Al, that we're doing here today, because this is a memory and a time for us to talk about things. And so I don't want to shortchange you.
Have some balls and speak about this.
Well, I don't want to shortchange you, Al, but in the process, and Al just disappeared. Speaking of having them, obviously we didn't. There you go. But nonetheless, I mean, it is a question. And I think I've said this before, local radio, like the media, reinvents itself and changes itself in many different ways. We have, just like years ago, and John, and I think you're probably a person that can attest to this, there was a time when FM radio was literally the ugly stepchild of radio.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And then pretty soon, the next thing you knew, that took over, and it was pretty, you were looking at those guys.
I remember.
And they were the cash cow.
I remember in the late 50s, early 60s, FM was just starting to come awake. But our FM operation at that time, we separate broadcast in the evening. RFM was simulcast in the daytime with the AM, and at night we played an opera.
Mm-hmm.
Just tracked it.
Right, absolutely.
That was it.
And years later, it changed totally around. And
right.
and then AM radio reinvented itself with talk. And now, if you're a student of what's going on currently, talk is moving in a lot of different cities from AM to FM. And we now have the internet, which is a huge, huge difference for a lot of folks. The internet gives people millions upon millions a chance to broadcast themselves. Look at iTunes, look at the podcast. Everybody gets a chance to do that.
The other thing that people should remember is that the commercial retail support for local broadcasting isn't there anymore. There are no real local banks. There are no real local retailers. There are very few locally owned businesses in Stamford or Norwalk that are capable of supporting anything.
Mm-hmm.
They're just not there.
Which certainly plays into the fact.
It's a major fact.
So what we have here is a chance for local radio to migrate into something different. And, you know, I'm not going to lie to you because I have no reason to. It is going to be a different animal than what you have heard here on these radio stations the past year, the past 10 years, the past 20, 30 years, 40 years. It is a different animal, but it is still going to exist in its own form. And the forum, like you can use here, will be open. Phones will be open. The folks have email addresses and mail addresses, and rational, constructive criticism is always welcomed by everybody in this business. And I know that the folks who I've spoken with at WSHU are great people. They're sweet individuals on a personal level and broadcasters on a professional level, and they're more than happy to talk to people and work things into what they do as well. So simple as it goes, that's pretty much what it is. simple as it. We talked a little bit about music, so I thought it might be kind of fun if we...
1350 WNLK, Norwalk.
I thought it might be fun to play a couple of the songs that maybe some of the stations played as we take a break. 845-3044. Love to have you join us here at the radio station.
Maybe you want to give me kisses sweet, but only for one night with no repeat. And maybe you'll go away and never call. And a taste of honey's worse than none at all. Oh, little girl, in that case, I don't want no part. I do believe that that would only break my heart. But if you feel like loving me and you got the notion, I second that emotion.
WSCC 1350 WNLK. Emotion is what it's all about here on this day that will be the last from this facility as a WSDC and WNLK transfer ownership from Cox Media Group to the folks at Sacred Heart University. And another chapter begins in what has been a decades-long broadcast story. I got some folks in there with me. Peter Holliday, John Roman, both associated for a number of years with WSDC. George Cooper's along from WNLK back in the good old days. George, grab that mic. You were, as I was playing the music, you were talking about one of the big events that NLK had musically back years ago. What was that?
Well, there was a concert at the old Norwalk High School, which is now the City Hall, in the concert hall, and the Glenn Miller Band from Yale University in 1943 played that auditorium.
Wow.
And I had gone. I was in high school at the time. And their soloist was Tony Martin, a movie star that some of you may remember.
Right, this is like would be like the Beatles coming in the 60s. Peter, during your time or whatever, you know, or today, a huge star like a Britney Spears or a Lady Gaga coming to Norwalk. I mean, it must have been. How big was the audience for that?
Sold out, I think. I think it was standing room.
Really?
I remember.
Wow. Made all the papers and everything. And who was the host of the show? You told me
the
we were off.
The MC was the movie actor Broderick Crawford.
Right. Who went on to some big things in TV, too, as well.
Yes, yes.
That's amazing.
He was a sergeant in the Air Force at the time, I believe. Glenn Miller himself did not appear. The band.
But he got a cut of the money, I bet. He got a piece of the ticket action.
I'm sure.
He surely did.
Yes.
That's amazing. Let me bring on another person here. Good afternoon, sir.
Hello.
This gentleman who's on the phone with me right now was here at the radio station when I began. In fact, you know, I think you trained me at this radio station.
And, I think I did, yeah.
And we spent a number of years together. And you were also at WSTC. It is Frank Morrow, who was involved in... Yeah, you were a little of a disc jockey for a while, but you were mostly known for news. Frank, when did you get involved with the radio stations?
Well, I actually, Mike, got involved with WSTC first. I was actually in high school at Stanford High School, and I was part of a program that was done once a month or once every couple of months called Stanford High School on the Air. It was a rotating feature that they used to let the schools have some time to talk about their current events. And my advisor, who was a teacher at Stanford High School by the name of John Scanlon, actually told me one day that they had an opening at WSTC. And I was, you know, craving to get into the business at that time. I was about 17 or 18 years old. And I went and I spoke to some people, and they hired me. It was an off-air position, but I was happy just to be in the building. And that was 1977, and as I'm sure John Roman or Pete Halliday can tell you, I tried to spend as much time as I could in the newsroom or at the studios when I wasn't doing things like putting in fluorescent light bulbs or cutting the grass or doing something else that I was doing
right.
My job.
That's very right.
So yeah, we talked, Frankie. We talked about the bug, and you know, and you, I know the answer to this, but let me just ask it. You had the bug.
Oh yeah.
You had the radio bug. Now then, you transitioned from there to NLK, where you and I found each other in 1980 or so. When did you actually come into NLK?
Well, it was about a year and a half or so later. I did some retail in between, but I had the bug, as you said. I still have it today, actually. And I was able to, I sort of auditioned for Phil Cutting, who was the program director at NLK in 1979. And they had some overnight positions open, Mike, which is what I think, you know, you and I sort of met at that location.
Yep.
And they were rotating positions at that time to just babysit the FM station overnight, but prepare the AM for the morning show for David Smith and turn off the transmitter and turn it back on the AM side and so on and so forth. And I was happy as a clam doing that. And nobody else really wanted to work in my age group at the time, being about 18 or 19. Everybody said, I'm not working overnights. I'm not working weekends. Those are nights to go out. And I got in the door that way, actually, at NLK.
You know, during those years, and they were fun years. I mean, you and I had a blast. An absolute
blast. We had a great time together.
You know, not that it's any different today, but we had zero money. And so we had, but we didn't care. We had a good time. We had an incredible time. And it's a time that I think that is not necessarily changed. I see people here to this day, to the moment where I'm at, Frank, dedicated folks that we've had working for us for a while here, some of who have only been in the business maybe a year, maybe less than that, who are, you know, thrilled and will spend every moment they can here within a radio station. Behind the scenes, just like you said, and in front of the microphone as well. So the bug does not get killed. The disease is certainly not being curtailed in any way, shape, or form.
Well, there's something that's so beautiful about radio, something so simple and pure, and as we saw just in the last snowstorm that we had, and previous to that, Irene, something very vital to the community, something that's so important that, you know, most of us sort of take for granted until we absolutely need it. But I've always found its simplicity to be so wonderful, and I have spent some time in television, which is a much more complicated animal, and I still, you know, my first love will always be radio.
Well, mine as well. Now, you were at WNLK, like you say, doing the overnight thing, but you migrated into news from there because, as I recall, you were a huge news junkie. Imagine what you'd have been like with the internet at that time, huh?
Absolutely. Well, I certainly, that's what I wanted to do, and as I said, you know, when I was at STC, I craved to be in that newsroom, and I spent as much time as I could before they threw me out to do the work that they had to do, but I would sort of like steal the copy that they didn't need, the AP copy that was trashed, and I'd take it home and I'd practice with it because that's really what I wanted to do. So when I got the opportunity to do that, I was sort of in the door at NLK, and ironically, I've sort of bounced between these two radio stations for so many years of my career, it's kind of interesting. But I actually had the opportunity to do news under John Capiello, who hired me, and he himself was a relatively new news director at that time. But he gave me the opportunity to go out and cover meetings, common council meetings, planning and zoning meetings. Some of them were really long and really boring, but, you know, that had to be done. And as John Roman would attest, because I know John covered, you know, 8 meetings in one night, remarkably, he had the ability to do that, such a talented guy. But I think I learned so much about the business that way. That's how I cut my teeth in the business. I learned how to, they gave me the opportunity to anchor, Mike, as you know, because you were there at the time.
Yep.
The opportunity to cover breaking news when we had, you know, we were really, we fielded quite a news team in those days. These days, unthinkable for local radio, but, you know, four or five people, and we were out there covering the community. And
well, one thing about radio, Frank, one thing about radio is opportunity. You bring a really good point. I mean, opportunity, one thing it offers and is offered in great riches to folks is the opportunity to do a number of things. I mean, it not necessarily is the most highest paying profession in the world. We know that. All kidding. All kidding aside, it really isn't. But the opportunity is there. And for folks who are desperate and interested and got that, like we said, that bug, I mean, the door is there. And smart broadcasters all over the country can recognize those people and bring them in. And then in turn, those people a decade or so later become smart broadcasters and bring in a new group. So the it just kind of goes on, the never-ending cycle.
That's right. It's people who are passionate about it, but that's the first rule of it. And I'm happy to say that all the people who you're talking to today and the people who are there with you, I'm happy that I had the ability to learn from them, people who were passionate and serious about the business. And I feel that I had great teachers. And that's what really gave me the ability to have a career in this medium. And right, nobody's getting rich off of it, but I can honestly say I've enjoyed every day. I enjoy going to work now. I still work for a radio station here in Connecticut in Waterbury.
You can say the call letters, Frank. It's all right.
It's WATR in Waterbury, owned by the Gilmore family, and I have a morning man by the name of Tom Shute, who I work with, who it brings me back. One of the reasons I'm working there is because it reminded me of these stations, and I really felt, you know, they say you can't go back, and maybe you can't go back forever, but I really felt, and I was right in this, that I was at a place where I had been before and thoroughly enjoyed. And I'm there again, and I enjoy it. I walk in the door every day, and I do the product, and we see a lot of people in the community. These are the people who walk in off the street. They want to see you. They know you remember their birthdays. They know that you know the neighborhoods and that kind of thing. And they're happy to have a local product like this.
Before we move on, because I got the window out into the studio here, I've got people that are lining up, and I want to get a chance for everybody to join us. We're going to be on until 6, and I want to have a lot of memories to share and some voices as well. Frank, what's your best memory? What any good stories you took away from it?
Well, it's hard to pin it down to one memory. There are so many memories, so many election nights that were covered, so many storms, snowstorms, Hurricane Gloria, where people, you know, just pitched in like they've done during these storms. Times, Mike, with you, when we did, you know, all kinds of things. We did whatever we had to do for both stations and really pulled together as a family. They were all wonderful memories.
You know, one of the things that you mentioned there is the fact that there are so many great news events. And, you know, it would be great if we could sit back and remember all those would have happened and how many of those that these radio signals brought into people's home, but I think that people have their own individual memories of things all the way back to the 50s, to things like the Kennedy assassination, to the Vietnam War, to the things like the flood in Norwalk, to the blackout and all that sort of thing. Those are things that are very, very important. I'm going to grab a microphone here if we can. You, sir, who just walked in the door. Frank, there's a voice here that you will remember. This kind of is our little hometown reunion. I'm going to let this gentleman put a pair of headphones on, Frank, and you're going to recognize him. If you're among the folks who are waiting online, and I know who you are, and I love you, just stay with us. Don't go away. All right, he's shaking hands. Take the microphone there, Ace.
Jeez, all this in headsets, too, Mike.
How are you? How are you? David Smith, welcome back to the microphone.
This is a very, very...
Frank Morrow was on the phone with us.
Oh, he is. Hello there, Frank.
Hey, David. How are you, David?
How are you doing, bud?
I'm doing well.
David wants to know where the coffee.
Voice.
He wants to know where the coffee is you used to make for him every morning.
And the Dunkin' Donuts.
And the Dunkin'. He wants to know where those are right now.
Keep those coming, baby. How are you doing?
Absolutely.
How's your family? Carol, good and everything.
Everybody's good. How are you doing? I know you've had some. You've been busy lately.
Yeah,
family issues. Everybody good?
We've had some very high drama in my household, but
I've heard.
It's not the way you want to spend 6 weeks in Australia, but it's fortunately things.
Well, right?
She's doing well, and on the way back, and it's an ongoing
good
process. But
Carol's sending Carol's blowing kisses to you right now,
and back. Hey, Mike, it is very
to
eerie
you,
to
my
be
friend.
Here.
Yeah, it is.
Thank you for the message the other day.
Oh, absolutely, my
appreciate
friend. I reached
that
out as fast as I could to so many people, and so many folks didn't have time to join us or whatever, and so many did, and the still the need is is there to share some memories. David, you came along when? When was your first time?
1975. Came in at that point, and the stations had just been purchased by a gentleman from Greenwich named Michael F. Hansen. And Mike was a young guy who battled with a number of syndicates. You'll recall these days. Battled with a number of syndicates to get a hold of these stations. They were hot commodities.
Really?
At that time, it was WNLK and WDRN.
Yes.
Right, FM.
As we recall. And, yeah, WNLK and WDRN were high atop the glorious Kittytown building, which, in fact, was the WNLK building at that time.
Really?
And
no one
out
told
the front.
Me that. I thought I was going to work at a Kittytown.
Oh, no. No, no. That you did, but
yeah, I
not,
did.
Not
yeah,
at the
you
time
never told,
I started.
You never told me that was a building. Now, at the time, what kind of format were they doing?
They were doing something from about the 1840s. everybody had to do their turn on the crank generator to keep any kind of a signal going out there. It was a station that looked like any 1930s or 40s radio movie that you ever saw in your life.
Right.
Huge, heavy drapes over the long windows, ribbon microphones, and just a huge full concert grand piano in one of the studio rooms.
Really?
Just in case you needed it.
Wow.
And all sorts of things that you would have seen in any decent 1930s radio movie.
Except we're talking 1975.
Except this was the 1970s, yeah.
Radio, by the way, is the real museum of the world. It's, you know,
and this
it
was.
Can take credit for that. You go to any radio station, you can find artifacts. You know, thank God for eBay, because when we get out here tonight, I'm making a fortune. David, what kind of, at that time, was Phil Cutting the program director?
No, he was not there yet. A fellow by the name of Dick Minerva.
Oh, okay.
It was a landmark in the area, in particular in Norwalk, but in the entire area, and a man who not only was one of the nicest people in the entire world, but also had one of the best voices you ever wanted to hear, and that was whether he was on the air or whether he was singing. And fortunately, he did a lot of singing for many, many years virtually up until his death. And he had a beautiful, beautiful voice and was much in demand to do weddings and all the sorts of things that you would do. And his Ave Maria would bring anybody to tears. But in any case, he was the program director at that time when Mike bought the stations and brought me from, I was then in Greenwich at WGCH.
Mm-hmm.
And Mike said, hey, kid. You want to?
Yeah, I mean, you had to be. You were the young punk coming in.
Yeah, sort of. You want to take a flyer here and see what starting a radio station can be? And he said, "You sweet talk me into it again, Mike. Let's
did
go."
Did you start? Did you start on mornings?
Did.
Wow.
Did.
At any point in time, that's a nice jump.
Yep. It was a very interesting jump, and certainly called for a lot of new alarm clocks. But sure enough, we cranked that out, and it was a very dramatic change in formatting and change in lots of different ways, as at that time, these stations had individual programs for just about any nationality that
yes.
you can imagine.
Yes. Uh-huh. Earlier today, Paul Piorek was here, and he's hopefully going to stop by again. Paul and I...
Was he
started,
doing some Polish for you?
We used to work the Sunday shift. And on Sundays, there was a litany of programs, starting with the Polish Hour.
Yeah.
And you know something? I'm going to wait for Paul to stop by, because he remembers the name of the very sweet lady who did that. There was religion from all sorts of different ethnic corners of the world. Saturday nights were all Spanish on WNLK at
right,
that time.
Right,
for the entire evening. Here's something I want to, Frank, I want to ask you a question. I'm going to put you on the spot. Dave was talking about alarm clocks. By the time you got there, how many times did you have to wake David up at home when he wasn't in there at 5:30?
You know, he was remarkable that way because he was always there. I won't tell you what condition he was in, but he was always there. Right on the money, as long as you had coffee going, and that was one of my responsibilities overnight, was to make sure coffee was brewed and there. We were good. Everything was good to go at that point.
It was sliding in the door just as it was time to key up the mic, and off we went on our merry way.
Well, I remember something that I'm going to share. Hopefully I haven't got this wrong, but I don't think I do. There was a time, I think it was about 1981 or so, that David was working in his yard. David was cutting limbs off of a tree in his yard with a I would assume a chainsaw.
That's right.
And
that's right.
Being in radio, that necessarily means you're automatically not the handiest guy in the world. That's why these home improvement shows do well on radio, because we love those guys, because the rest of us are lucky to be able to walk and chew gum. David fit right into there by sawing off, I believe, the limb he was sitting on at the time.
Well,
and Warner Brothers cartoon, hit the ground, broke his leg. And for about 3 months, my job was to be David's manservant. Quite frankly, let's be honest about this. I came in, I made you coffee, I ran the equipment for David while I was on the air. And David is a trooper. I mean, I got news for you. You know, most people would say I'm out of it, but David came in in fact, I went with you. I was at the doctor's office with you when you had your cast taken off. I was
out of it, but not in words.
Yeah, but you were a trooper, came through the whole time.
Yeah.
And we had to make a little extra room for the cast, but he came in. We still played the music and got to sports and got everything covered, and David did not leave Fairfield County alone for those months as he recuperated.
Well, I had some friends, fortunately, who took me in immediately after getting out of the hospital, and I actually broadcast from their home.
I remember
up in Cranberry.
I remember
for,
that.
Several
I remember
weeks
that too.
Until I could be left alone. They wouldn't let me out of the hospital unless I had somebody to go to. And my friends, the Renzulli, said, "All right, we're suckers. We'll take you in."
By the way, this is the days before the medical profession was as it is right now. These days, David would have been out in 48 hours. It's like, good luck, Bart. See you around, pal.
Oh, we forgot the cast. Sorry.
Yeah, no big problem there. But it was,
that's
that's one of my biggest, we had a lot of fun, biggest memories, a lot of fun at the radio station. At that time, with a lot of great folks, and it's interesting because at the time, there were two big competitors of WNLK, WSTC, and WMMM in Westport.
That's right.
The man who was at WMMM in Westport is my close friend, and it was sitting here just a couple of hours ago, John Labarca. And at the time, he was the enemy.
That's right.
And at the time, John Roman, you were the enemy. And we were all. I don't. I'm not saying we didn't egg each other's cars or there were no bananas in the tailpipes, but still, we had a good time. We had a good time, and we were competitors.
Well, it was friendly competition that generally took place, and everybody had sort of their own bailiwicks and did their things, but. A lot of it was something that I think a lot of people have missed was the very local nature of it, where you would get out and about and do a lot of remotes in and around.
Remote putting
your area.
A broadcast in a different area besides in the radio station.
Outside of the studio. Mm-hmm. And that was something that a lot of people really enjoyed, getting to see people who shouldn't be seen because they're on radio, but getting to do things for the community out and about, whether it was a commercial venture or something not so commercial. Right, John?
Right.
It was important to be a part of the community and show yourself.
We did a lot of meetings, and we were out doing Toys for Tots live at all different remotes every day.
Sure.
Absolutely. Sure. And as a morning man, I mean, and both of you guys will attest the fact that you were always, it wasn't a weekend that, you know, you didn't work a five-day week.
No.
Smith worked a five-day week. He had a really good agent.
It was
but you'd be out
on the weekends.
Getting a call Christmas Eve, Christmas morning, being told that the morning guy didn't show up. That means you're going.
Yeah, there you go. Frank Morrow, I got a couple calls I want to get to here. Thank you, my friends. Please give me a buzz. You got my number now, all right?
I certainly do. Pleasure. Thanks for inviting me.
Frank, all the best.
Take care, Frank.
Everybody be well.
Thanks,
our best to Carol and everybody. Thank you very much. Stay with us. Let me go over here because this gentleman has been so patient. Hello, sir.
Hello. How are you?
This is Bob Maroney. Now, I'm not sure who has worked with Bob here, but
we
Bob,
all have.
We all have. So. Bob was here when I came to Cox Media. Bob was with the stations for a while. Bob, give me your history. What'd you do?
Okay. From 1988. To 1992-ish, I was a production director for WSTC and WJAZ. I was hired by Warren Latta, Bill White, and Rick Petrone.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, there was a news block with Steve Orr and Susan, I forget her maiden name.
DeWalt.
But her married name is Bolognino.
Susan DeWalt.
There you go. John Roman also did some news in the afternoon, I guess.
Right.
We had Tommy Edison, who did some traffic.
Tommy Edison?
Yeah, he started with us.
That's right. And let's see, Mr. Tobin did, was it middays? And Bill White did after.